Hi, this is Don Flugenger, executive editor of Search CRM.
And this is Jesse Scardita, news writer for Search CRM.
And this is the Pipeline Podcast. How are you doing today, Jesse?
Doing well, Don. It's been a while since we've been on the mic here in this nice windowless soundproof room.
Yeah, well, we've been on walkabout, and I went to PegaWorld in Las Vegas last week, but while I was there...
I was at SAP Sapphire in Orlando.
That was your first one, right?
Yeah, first SAP event, first Sapphire event. Usually, and for stringent readers of TechTarget, no, we do have a Search SAP site that we are in a part of that does terrific SAP coverage. But this conference had a little bit of a CRM twist to it, so we decided to send myself along.
Well, tell me about that. While I was at PegaWorld, all the analysts and others around me and your coverage said that this was a CRM-focused show. Now, as we know, SAP does all kinds of things, from ERP to all kinds of legacy back-end systems. And I wouldn't say legacy, but they're well-established.
Right.
And CRM hasn't always been the focus, and they acquired Hybris a few years ago to sort of boost their customer experience footprint. But what happened at this show?
So you touched on a lot of the different aspects that were brought up at the show. You're right that SAP has been mainly back office. They are probably the market leader in ERP software. And, of course, CRM focuses more on the front office, ERP on the back office, and it's been a goal in the CRM industry to kind of combine those two together for companies that want that connection between those two. And SAP is moving forward to try to do that and put Salesforce right in its bullseye and see if it can take some of the market share from the front office leader of Salesforce. And at the event, they officially unveiled, they call it a SAP C4HANA, that's C/4HANA. The marketing lingo for SAP confuses a lot of people, myself included, but we believe the C stands for customer, and HANA is kind of their overall operating system that they use. But the Bill McDermott, the CEO of SAP, was frank in the opening keynote about SAP's position in the CRM space and said directly that SAP was the last of the large vendors to accept the status quo of CRM and will be the first to change it, he believes, with this movement towards a more of a 360-degree view of the customer by bundling together a suite of SAP products. You mentioned Hybris being an acquisition a couple years ago. That combined with Gigya, which was another acquisition, and Callidus Cloud, which was the most recent one earlier this year, really help bring together those processes that help companies see what their customers are doing, monitor where they like to go, and really help process that data. And now that SAP has all that in one place, they're really moving on this mission that analysts have said they've talked about for years, but now everything's in place for them to actually act on it.
Well, what other interesting highlights did you pick up from the show? In the CRM realm or the marketing realm, it wasn't all CRM, was it?
It was surprisingly quite a bit. That was my main focus. Like I said, we had SAP writers there, and I kind of let them mine the other grounds. I did a little bit on Hybris. I saw a couple sessions talking about how companies like Balsam Brands, which runs Balsam Hills, which is the world's largest artificial Christmas tree provider and manufacturer. They explained how they used Hybris to migrate from legacy commerce products to help with international growth. There was another manufacturing company that is European-based, when the name is escaping me right now. I haven't written the story on it yet, but a similar story on how they used Callidus Cloud to migrate their international sales departments. They have them all over the world, from on-premise sales solutions or Salesforce Sales Cloud. And being able to, you know, seeing those customer stories is always the highlight of these conferences, is to hear how various companies are using some of these products. But overall, it was a good conference. It was informative, like you said. It was CRM heavy, which you don't normally expect from SAP, but I assume that in the next couple months, it will be exciting to see the customer stories coming out of the first use cases of C4HANA and see if it's delivering on the promise that SAP hopes it does. But that was pretty much my SAP coverage. Don, what happened in the dry heat of the desert of Vegas at PegaWorld? That's always a fun one to go to, right?
Yeah, at the MGM Grand in Vegas. And it was 105 degrees every day, just like last year, just like clockwork. Yeah, Pega's got a pretty nice user show going on, and they give us wonderful access to their customers, and you can rub elbows with 5,000 customers. And they sort of play in the larger international Fortune 500, Fortune 400. So they have a lot of international banking going on there and things like that. And they had two big announcements, I guess. Number one, they rebranded everything Pega Infinity because they got rid of version numbers. It's a new platform. And, of course, you'll hear a podcast that I did with Pega's chief marketing officer, Tom Libretto, and I'm like, hey, are you going to name the next version after a different Journey album?
Well, you go to the Journey reference. Myself, that seems a little dated for me. I'm a big fan of The Office, and I can't get past the comparisons to Dunder Mifflin Infinity that they tried to roll out with the all digital, and fans of The Office will know that that didn't end up working well. So I'm not sure if any Pega executives in the marketing and creation space were Dunder Mifflin fans, but maybe they were Journey fans.
Well, they were definitely, they will never stop believing there at Pega. But anyway, so Pega Infinity was their big announcement, but the new suite of tools on the platform, there's a lot of AI going on to track user behavior and automate a lot of processes. They talk about bots, but not in the sense of chatbots, although that's part of it, but more like macros. So like one example, they said the most requested and most used bot is at call centers, powered by Pega platform or however they said. But they might have 20 systems. A representative might have 20 systems to log into because, this, that, the other thing, the phone, all the communication suite and the record keeping behind it. And they have one button. It's almost like single sign-on, but since single sign-on might not be available for some of these legacy systems, a bot will log in everything and do what single sign-on might. Or another favorite application of Pega customers is a little desktop app that can mine a piece of data from a legacy system that doesn't have an API. So, some old system from 1998 that they're still using
Siebel
for
systems,
billing or whatever. They can click on that and enter the customer's name, and they bring back the data that the API would have if it had an API, right? So, and then the other big announcement was the hype around blockchain, which I would say Pega is pretty self-deprecating about.
I was going to say, there are some mixed messages with the executives at Pega. Was that right?
Yeah, we'll get into that in our podcast, too. So I'm teasing y'all. Go listen to the podcast.
Tune in on the next episode of Pipeline for more.
But basically, they announced blockchain, and they didn't go as far as admitting that they were grabbing the SEO around blockchain for that news cycle, but the CEO, Alan Treffler, and founder of the company, mocked blockchain hype in his keynote. And what it turns out is that the blockchain integration is for a very specific use case in the financial markets, which apparently customer onboarding, especially in the United States, but also in other heavily regulated countries, if a customer can hold on to their information and it's validated through a blockchain, it's almost like filling out forms in advance. And like when you have to produce a bunch of documents to prove your identity, well, what if you had that on the blockchain and you could email somebody a public key? And I guess the idea is through this private blockchain, a consortium of banks can sort of crowdsource all this onerous record keeping And that's what they're using the blockchain for. And it was requested by customers. They didn't just do this to grab the hype. They did it because it was being asked for.
It's interesting because, you know, we've seen in the financial industry that because of the regulation, because of so much legacy systems, they're kind of behind the times a lot on emerging technology. But it's interesting that blockchain, certainly an emerging technology, might find one of its first large use cases in the financial space just because of the fit there between the security that blockchain provides and the security that financial institutions need. It seems like a good fit for a great early use case, and it might go kind of backwards. And you see retail and other usually early adopters look at financial systems and see blockchain working there and then use it to adopt it in their field. So I can see how that can work for Pega, but yeah, I mean, that's for definitely a certain industry and not market-wide. I'm interested to hear your perspective. I know that the Pega keynotes in the past have usually been pretty outspoken, and we've certainly been places with other CRM vendors where Pega likes to show up and try to steal some of the marketing thunder and definitely kind of grab some of that. Were they really just focused on Pega at this event, or were they trying to put other competitors in their scopes?
It wasn't like last year. This year it was more like Treffler and the lieutenants were talking about vague hype in the marketplace, as opposed to last year. Alan Treffler called out Mark Benioff with you know, the bull beep word in his keynote, and it, not so much this year. But right. You know, it's always around that Pega is always up for a fight. You know,
yeah. There's a lot of kind of frenemies and competition in the CRM space, and it's something, you know, with my sports background, that's always fun to see is these large companies knowing that they have to work together for some extent because it's what some customers want, but at the end they really, you know, want to go after the opposition.
Well, also, to very much echoing the themes of your SAP show, I think, and this is one analyst put it to me this way, I'm sort of stealing his perspective, but it's your friend, Paul Greenberg.
Oh, yes. But, Paul, hopefully you're a listener by now.
But he said that, sort of like SAP, Pega has really evolved its approach, philosophy, platform, and image from a back-end BI system to CRM first, or very close to CRM first, if not 50-50 shared with the other things it does. And so they're really pushing CRM right now, whereas maybe 3, 4, or 5 years ago they were not. And because that's where the business is. When multiple analysts come out and say that CRM is the largest technology market for the next 5 years.
Right. Eclipsed ERP, yep.
Yep. So you can get the Pegas and the SAPs maybe grudgingly coming to our side of the table,
right, yeah.
But here they are.
We'll take more content, that's for sure. And vendors like those are always great ones to work with that, you know, give you customers, give you executives, give you information to work with, and don't kind of drag you around a lot, which is nice to have. But you know, with CRM, obviously, you know, anyone listening to this knows it stands for customer relationship management. And you found a story that is, you know, a little bit off the normal path that we have. But Uber's doing some interesting developments with AI in hopes of managing its customers better or differently. Or that's left up for interpretation.
Well, I saw this, and we have to talk about it. Within the last 24 hours, and Uber's applied for a patent. So we know that integrating it into the app is going to be a while off.
But
Oh my gosh, if you're the kind of person who's worried about what people can track about you, this thing is crazy. They applied for a patent in the U.S. Patent Office on using artificial intelligence to determine how drunk a passenger who is summoning a ride may be. And this isn't just, you know, that sounds kind of, how would they do that? Oh, this is big. They are looking at the passenger's location, and they're hashing it against how accurately they are typing, you know, and I would imagine how many times they have to erase something.
Retype the location.
I picked the wrong pull down five times. Or
and that's not also, where I live.
Even the angle at which they are holding their phone is in the patent, and you know that there will probably be other things in the app that maybe aren't patented that sort of add to this.
Help it's figure that out.
Kind of crazy how many data points they're pulling there, but how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm holding my phone right now, and I'm trying to put myself in my drunken state of mind and figure out if I hold it differently. Like, at what angle do I hold my phone when I'm drunk trying to find an Uber, which I'm seeing Dave Chappelle and Jon Stewart tonight, so there'll probably be a couple drinks with that, so maybe I'll have more on this tomorrow. But, I mean, I hope there's not too much of a difference between
turn
it to the side.
Oh, it's vertical. Oh, it's horizontal.
And I mean, other things like how many, like tracking your typing info. I mean, the apps make it pretty easy. I mean, my home address where I'm trying to get back to is a button. Like, I don't need to type in my address every time. So, you know, if I hit the button right the first time and I'm inebriated, then maybe you'll think I'm okay. But I'm curious as to, you know, the reasoning behind this. I mean, is this something drivers ask for? Is this something riders ask for? Who is this hoping to help? I would hate to be an Uber driver who has to go pick up obnoxious drunk person after obnoxious drunk person. That's not a fun way to live. But I feel like that's not a choice you have if you're a ride sharing, if you work for a ride sharing company or work for a taxi company. It's difficult to pick and choose your clientele based on their inebriation. And then further, what are they going to consider intoxicated? I mean, how drunk is too drunk?
Right,
I mean,
that's is there a scale of 1 to 10 that
right,
it's going to give the driver? I don't know.
I mean, are we a couple steps away from, you know, Uber activating a breathalyzer for you before you can push, you know, send for your ride share? But yeah. I can understand the safety aspects of it. I can't imagine some of the things that drivers have to go through, you know, picking up obnoxious people, but I don't know how you solve that. I mean, I'd rather them picking up obnoxious people than those drunk people trying to drive themselves.
Right. But well, the main thing is too, I bet the drivers ask for it, and I bet it's a split decision out there. Some drivers probably like picking up drunk people because they tip more and maybe and are more grateful that they have a designated driver.
More energetic, more it's a more lively car, I'm sure.
But there are others who just don't want to get involved with it and would rather have forewarning. So Uber's probably just providing information whichever way you swing on this.
But I'm just curious about the trickle down. So a drunk person who might have driven somewhere with their car and they know they're too drunk to drive home, so they try to get an Uber, but they get one. The person, the driver can figure out that they're drunk. No, I don't want to get them. So then they try to get someone else, another Uber driver, and then they say no. And then another one says no because they don't want to pick up a drunk person. At what point does that person say, you know, screw it, I'll get home myself? And now they're driving themselves drunk. I don't know if...
Or walking home in the middle of the street.
Or walking home drunk, yeah, and endangering themselves, endangering someone else. So I don't know if the benefit of helping these drivers outweighs the cost of potentially having a rider who is fed up trying to find a driver that will pick them up say, screw it, I'm going to do this myself and lead to some more trouble.
Or probably to Uber's detriment, if this is used against the riders enough times, they'll just take a friggin' taxi.
Or how about a Lyft, the other ride sharing
exactly,
guy. I got
yeah.
both apps. You price them, any smart person has both, and you're pricing them against each other on regular trips. So
yeah.
That's something, you know, we'll look and see and we'll wait and see. And if anything comes of it, then, you know, I'm sure we'll probably talk about it again in this space.
I wonder in Vegas, you know, sometimes you call an Uber and then it goes away and you get a second or third driver.
Yep.
And, you know, some of this is keyed to passenger ratings.
Right.
And the driver takes a look at your profile and like, and in Vegas, I took an Uber, and I went to tip, and it's the stupid app made. I wanted to give $3.
Yeah.
And so, how much do you want to tip? And it, you know, it gave me a range of choices: $1, $20, or $100. Yeah, I was like, I just want to do $3. So I hit the button, and I put in $3. Okay. you have to go 300 for $3. So this driver got 3 cents, and he probably said, "Well, this guy's a loser." Rider. And I kept worrying about, and I did have situations after that where drivers would peel off, and I'd get a second car, and I'm like, "Oh, did my 3 cent tip that the Uber app, which is so unintuitive in this particular case, because their implementation of tipping is not so good."
No.
Right? So,
For the record, I have a 4.86 passenger rating. Ooh. For any Uber drivers that are listening to this right now. Think about whether or not to pick me up. And I tip better than 3 cents as well.
Except when you're drunk?
That's true, yes.
I can't find the button! All right. Well, this has been a fun pipeline.
It's been nice to get back to it.
We'll be on again soon. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks, Don.